Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on where you are, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Parker, and I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer support to our speakers. Today, we're welcoming a special guest, Jennifer Cranbaugh. With that started, I'll get handed over to her, and we can get going.
All right. Thank you, Parker. I'm thrilled to be here again today. As you see, today's webinar is a series. We've been talking about food safety culture, and today we're going to be talking about part two, which is 10 ways to develop food safety culture. So before we get too far in, I'll just do a quick introduction of myself again. Oops, I probably skipped a slide. No, I didn't. Sorry about that. Just getting my fingers wet here. Okay, so my background, I have a food science degree from Purdue University, for those that have never encountered me before. I have 8 years of experience in the manufacturing industry from food science-based fields, so like dairy and juice and water manufacturing, cultured products, all types of things. I did a lot of work in production supervision, buyer planner, management leadership, quality assurance, and HACCP and food safety plans. This was pre-GFSI requirements and pre-FSMA, so I'm dating myself a little bit. At that point, I shifted over into Kroger headquarters and started working at that team, managing mostly the supplier compliance for the private label companies that were supplying Kroger with their products. I was also vetting suppliers in all other areas of compliance when I did what I call a detour into global sourcing. So I worked a long time, a few years into global sourcing and started helping and understanding direct imports. And then I shifted back into regulatory when the FSMA rule went into effect for FSVP. And became the business lead in some software development for Kroger. So got quite an extensive background in the food supply chain and supplier compliance management. In 2018, I veered away from corporate life and founded Safe Food En Route, which is a food safety consulting agency. And we are making corporate level food safety programs accessible to small and medium sized businesses. I like to say we're making it accessible to everyone. I also have contributed to Dr. Darren Detweiler's 2021 published book, Building the Future of Food Safety Technology, Blockchain and Beyond, which we were just kind of having a conversation before about blockchain as kind of the terminology is shifting more to traceability. You may have seen Dr. Detweiler featured recently on Netflix's recently published Poison, the show called Poison. So if you haven't seen his story, I recommend that you go and look at that and learn more about the food industry. Also, in that book, what I discussed mostly was things to consider from the user perspective of all documentation that needs to be digitized. I'm also a regular guest lecturer at Purdue University, Cincinnati State, and Fresno State University. And again, my passion is bringing to food businesses the support that I felt when I was in a corporately managed food facility. I love to make the programs accessible and assist companies to get their food safety programs to the same level as a large CPG and retailer manage their programs. So I do like to say our vision is to even the playing field with accessible and affordable food safety solutions for the food and dietary supplement sectors. We are doing this by unleashing the right people and processes in a powerful way. And I've been saying for a long time, people don't know what they don't know. And mostly what that means is that a majority of people are trying to do the right thing, but they don't always have the knowledge or know-how or skills. This is the reality of people, behavior, a growing business owner also experiencing these same types of things. In order to implement a program, you need to have people with the know-how to build your programs, but not just through documentation. You also need to invest in the right people, the right processes, and automation where it makes sense. So last time I also shared an impactful quote. I put on here, practice makes habit, just like any discipline in your life. Habits help you be better prepared. The quote that I shared last time was from the Drop-In CEO blog, and it said, the worst time to mitigate a crisis is when you're in the middle of one. And so I'm carrying that quote and this one about practice makes habit into part two of this series as well, because they both are so applicable. You must prepare for these types of scenarios. No one wants to contribute to illnesses and deaths caused by foodborne illness. And that takes work up front. So also last time we talked about the part one summary. So I just wanted to reshare that from the June 14th webinar that we did earlier this year. Five ways GFSI can build food safety culture was what we focused on. And so I'm gonna revisit the definition, the importance of food safety culture, and the five pillars that GFSI food safety recommends. And you'll notice that I did provide at the bottom of the screen the link to be able to find this information on the My GFSI website. All right, so just refreshing on, I created last time a self-made food safety culture definition. So I created it using a blended version of the definition of culture from the Merriam-Webster online dictionary, and I added food safety where it made sense. So this time I emphasized a few words that were more important in the phrasing, just so that we could kind of get level set in the context of food safety culture. So I'm just going to read it real quick. Beliefs, social forms, and material traits of the workplace that share attitudes, values, goals, and practices that support food safety. These set of food safety-driven values are in place in every practice of the company and are an integrated pattern for all employees. So in other words, the food safety culture is integrated into the daily life of the facility and the teams working within it. The material traits being paperwork and physical evidence of the beliefs, and social forms being the communication and messaging. Goals included the practices that you have and what is in place to get to the goals. In other words, the culture. And everyone is using these in an integrated pattern throughout the organization. Again, we'll touch on the importance of food safety and revisit the statistics. And again, I really encourage you to check out the Netflix documentary Poison that Dr. Detweiler was featured in. It really hones in on some of these stats a little bit more and then personalizes them. So again, according to the World Health Organization, we still have 600 million cases of foodborne illnesses occurring each year, and that leads up to 420,000 deaths globally. Much of the deaths occur in developing countries where food standards are not strict or are still not enforced, but we do have a global supply chain. So if a majority of the audience is in the US, then keeping that in mind that we have a global food supply chain. So the impact of a global food culture is even more important. And it's obviously still an issue because those we are in the US even still contributing to these numbers. The CDC reports that we have approximately one out of six people getting ill every year from foodborne illness and approximately 3,000 deaths per year related to it. Our goal as a community is to shift to prevention. The numbers on this slide make the incidents feel less personal, and that's why I encourage you to go watch that documentary if you have not checked it out, because it personalizes some of those numbers. Almost everyone, I would bet everyone on this webinar, and so far I'm seeing there's about 50 people on here so far, I would bet that each one of you knows someone who has been impacted by foodborne illness, or you yourself have been impacted by foodborne illness. So remember, it's people, especially as food safety professionals. We need to really remember that it is not just a number. It is a person, it is a family affected by it. All right, we also discussed on that webinar, again, like the whole point of it was talking about the GFSI benchmarking process and their guiding principle questions that help define if you have considered their five pillars for a food safety culture. So it includes the following. So vision and mission, and the top-down support of the people. And just as a refresher on that, GFSI is a great way to enforce the practices to ensure that various components are covered. It is critical to have leadership support driven from all ends of the organization. And it cannot just be the food safety quality team or, they're leading the enforcement of the food safety programs. It needs to be a core value of the entire company. And similar to the dictionary definition, there's a theme that is really about culture, and that is what I think you find in this carries over into the 10 ways to develop a good food safety culture as well. So again, it's kind of thinking about consistency and adaptability and hazard and risk awareness. So at this point, I'm going to pause for a minute and let Parker take over to do a poll to ask about what your role is in your company so that I can just understand our audience a little bit more. So I know who I'm preaching to, honestly. Not that I like preaching. I just sometimes I get on a high horse. So I want to make sure that I'm getting on the right high horse. Okay, we are getting some votes in. I'm seeing a good portion of food safety quality leads, which is really great to see. I'll give a few more seconds before we close, and then Parker, when you're ready, I think we're at 40 seconds or so, 77%. I think we try to go for 80, so if a few more people can vote, that would be fantastic. Okay. So it looks like a lot of people. So what I'm seeing is 80%, and Parker will share the results here on your screen for a second. What I see is that 85% of the people that I'm talking to are food safety and quality leads. So I'm not surprised by that. And I thank you for coming and listening to the webinar. I'm going to be preaching to the choir, and you know that. So I'm going to be really cautious about how we keep talking, just to maybe give you tips and tools to give to your management teams and your, other people, the executives that are on here. There are 8% owner founders, so I'm excited to see that. So welcome. I hope that you stick around and listen to the content in a way that you know how to implement it in your own companies, to help give your team the tools that they need for food safety culture. Okay, I can't tell if I'm back on. Yes, okay. So as we get started on the 10 ways to develop it, I want you to keep these five thoughts in mind. So the first off is culture. Is it intentional or not? You have a culture whether you realize it or not. It is never a question that there's some type of culture going on in your facility. Global supply chain. I mentioned before, we need to be thinking through the entire chain, and it is global. And so I want you to keep that in mind as you think about global or about food safety culture, because that is a key component with your raw material suppliers or the suppliers that your raw material suppliers are using. Everyone owns and manages food safety. Leaders and managers throughout every organization own it. Whether you know it or not, you do. And this is where I will get on my high horse occasionally, because this is one of the mistakes that I mentioned in our last webinar, But things that I see are leaders and managers not following the rules, or they're implementing things that like without consulting the food safety quality team or looking at it through that lens. And so that can be something that really gets in the way and hinders your food safety culture. Regular communication, education, creating metrics, teamwork, and personal accountability are all vital to advancing food safety everywhere. And then skills like adaptability and hazard awareness that were mentioned in the GFSI rule, you know, the GFSI schemes, that is also helps move the needle forward in food safety. These are skills that sometimes have nothing to do with food safety culture or nothing to do with food safety in particular, but more about leadership and managing change. And so personnel and leadership skills, I can say that that's an area that in my first 8 years of my career was an area that was missed. I didn't understand. I was kind of self-taught and self-trained, and I was going through the motions of training that were given to me, but I didn't understand how to apply it. So those are things as you grow your organizations and grow your teams to make sure that you understand the personnel and leadership skills are just as important, and then how to apply it to being in that regulatory or that food safety mindset role, whatever it might be. Because again, I don't want to say that it's just the food safety quality team, but it is something about the way you can communicate to each other throughout the organization. All right, let's jump into food safety culture. And again, the 10 ways. So we're going to jump right in. All right, so first steps in building a food safety culture are to have very clear policies related to food safety. It seems like a no-brainer, an easy thing to do, but many companies that we interact with do not include food safety in their initial vision and mission, nor in their procedures. So I'm just sharing an observation that we've made is that we don't think that it's necessarily an intentional avoidance. It's most companies, again, I kind of go back to most companies want to do the right thing and think they are legitimately doing the right thing. But many founders of food companies are getting excited to get the momentum that they're getting with their customers. And their main objective becomes to please the customer, especially if they land that big one, or a big one that they're trying to look at. And so they're really excited to start building a team they believe can support that objective. And so they start putting people in place. And they're learning as they go. And they usually are hiring their friends or people in their network. Those people are also learning as they go. So it's like this group of people that are learning all these things, but they might not necessarily be learning all the right things, right? Again, there's nothing wrong with this learning as you go process, but it is really important to focus on hiring the right people that can be trained. And it's also important to hire people that are already knowledgeable on some of those topics and have the expertise that you need. So for food safety, you need someone that is an experienced food safety professional. And if they are not, then they need to have the foundational skills that they can be trained. And again, we'll kind of go back to this quite a bit on it, because some of this relies on resources and where the resources are allocated whenever there's a new startup and when there's investment or anything like that. So it's still going into making sure that you have those people in place. And speaking of training, I do want to kind of think about that too. You need to also invest in training of the expert as well as the entire team to learn what the policies and procedures are. So you need somebody to write it, and you need somebody to also make sure that all the rest of the company knows it. You can't just have a binder of food safety and quality policies sitting in the QA manager or the food safety manager's office. You have to have it active and in training with all of the team so that everybody knows why we do things, and it's helpful for them to remember. So that's just something that it's kind of like Missouri, where it's the show me state. You need to show them the policies. You need to show them why we do these have these policies in place. And it goes back to those statistics and personalizing the statistics related to the deaths and the illnesses and trying to get it personalized so that they remember in their everyday activity, why are we doing what we're doing? Other options is to also get leadership, mentorship, and coaching for those people. So these might not be skills related again to food safety culture, but it really should be. So it's not always food safety that we're focusing on. Sometimes it's communication skills, it's know your audience, it's making sure that people are, you know, knowledgeable across the board to be able to communicate from the executive level to the employee level, to be able to share the message to justify why things need to be done the way they are. Sometimes we come in as food safety professionals, and now I'm going to be speaking a little bit to the audience majority. Sometimes we come in either way too analytical and we are sharing all the details. And that's way too much information for an executive. And it honestly is way too much information for the person on the line as well. So we have to get out of our analytical brains and be able to make that story much more concise. So be able to speak clearly. This is the problem. This is the risk of the problem. This is what I suggest the solution be. And so getting more concise in what is happening and make your, help your team understand as you are communicating this to this, the executives and to the other people, that not everybody else has your analytical brain and they all can't process it the same. They need to build that trust that you've done your due diligence to get to that information. All right, jumping into empowering employees. So all related, once you have appropriate personnel in place, you need to train them and the employees to know and empower them to make food safety related decisions. So you've trained them, you've given them enough information, enough data to help them support their decisions and why they would be able to make decisions appropriately online. And also just being aware that it is better to shut the line down because you think there is something wrong than to run an excess amount of product that has a potential safety hazard. And I, that sounds so like, duh, yes, I know that. But the employee on the line doesn't always know that. And sometimes the production team doesn't always think about it that way. So you're also learning how to communicate to the entire company that we are saving you money by shutting down and double checking everything's right. If it is a mistake that we shut it down, I'd rather it be a conservative mistake than a mistake that caused a lot of lost product. So helping them speak their language. Their language is in numbers and production line and dollars. Your language is prevention. So just keeping that in mind. Some of the things you can ask, what food safety related questions do your line operators need to make regularly? What do you hope they see without the food safety quality team's authority? So what do you want them to see? And what decisions do you want them to make based on that information? Do they understand how to make them? They need that material, right? So like they need that data to understand, okay, I need to know A plus B equals C, and that's perfect to go forward. But if A times B equals D, then I need to act differently. So you help them have a decision tree around their processes, and that will make their lives a lot easier, and they won't feel so kind of frozen in decision and have to call you all the time. So this also helps create autonomy on your line. Along with empowerment, so you see that communication is up there. So fostering the communication between all the departments. And I mentioned before, I kind of jumped ahead, but a tough and a really valuable lesson I've learned in my career is to know your audience. What is the easiest method to communicate to that audience? When you have a team member providing all those details in that to that upper management, I can't reiterate this enough, they will get lost in the discussion. They'll get bored. I just had a call yesterday with somebody that I was watching their facial expression while somebody on the line was talking, and And I could tell that the person was really shifting to try to stay focused on what we were talking about. They were kind of in their facial expression saying, get to the point faster. And you see those visual cues. Now in the age that we're in with, like currently I'm on a webinar and I can't see any of your faces, I will have difficulty knowing, am I boring my audience or not? So understanding those factors, but that's why it's so important to know your audience. That's why my first poll is, who are you? So that I understand who I'm talking to. With the upper management, they would prefer you tell you, go back to that concise, the concise writing, the concise speaking. They would rather you tell them the high level situation, the risk of leaving it that way, and what your suggested solution is. That's all. And the same is communicating with the employees. Some of the line employees don't need to have that entire analytical story again. They need to know what the recommendation is. They're making fast decisions and need to know your response. If you give them a decision tree, they know how to do it. But for a while, they might need you to tell them. So reminding your food safety quality team and building this into your communication meetings with them to speak the language of the audience that is listening. It's a really good way to go. Okay, lead by example. So I mentioned this was something that I can get on a soapbox about. So just looking at the quote that's on here, I respect those leaders that are getting in the trenches and working with the teams. And I think that's when you gain the respect of your colleagues and your teams. And that's from Julie Ferriott. I agree with this. To a degree, I'm learning how to get out of the way of my team. So from a business owner perspective, I'm trying to let them grow and get on their own platforms. But the soapbox that I get on is I just can't state it enough how important it is for leaders to lead by example. When a manager or an owner or an employee walks on the production floor, the behavior should be consistent. Even when visitors are walking the floor, it should be consistent every single time. And I know, I think I had a few people that were kind of like, here on what I was saying last time. But oftentimes I tour production sites, and one of the first indications of the health of food safety culture from an auditor perspective and from a food safety professional is when the company follows their own food safety procedures. And I always appreciate it. It looks a lot like when I walk in the door as a visitor, and if I'm in an authority position, so say I'm auditing a facility or I'm doing a diligence audit or something to that effect, and the owner of the company hands it off to somebody else, and that person teaches me the good manufacturing practices of the facility. They teach me the rules of the facility, or the owner themselves takes me through the process, and then they implement and do it step by step with me. In my previous jobs, I had a position, like I was a product development quality assurance manager at a juice company. And the, like, honestly, when I was there, the FDA walked in. It was very early. So again, I'm dating myself, juice HACCP days. The FDA person didn't even know the rules. And so I had to teach the FDA person the rules. So from a regulatory standpoint, that was really eye-opening, that the person that was walking in my facility didn't understand basic GMPs. But I also have seen it multiple times where when I walk through a facility with an owner or, you know, and we're as a visitor and we're a big group, and the owner steps, you know, like kind of lets everything slide. So they don't enforce their own rules. And so the employees that are on the line or in the facility take note of that. And they're like, why are they having to follow the rule, you know, don't have to follow the rules, but I do. Why is that okay? And so it creates confusion, and it creates a culture that has this like gray area, and you really want to be black and white on your policies. So it's so important. And it's also an example of empowerment and leadership for the team member that is facilitating the visitor tours. Again, when that FDA person was walking through my facility, I expected that they understood how to follow the policies, but probably she was testing me to teach her. And I was a young QA person at the time. So I didn't feel that empowerment to go at it and tell them, hey, you have to follow our rules. Here are all our rules, you know? So it's like even something so simple like that, but that is an empowering behavior. You must enforce it every time someone walks through the facility, whether it's interested buyers, private equity companies, inspectors, employees. You must be consistent and always follow the policy yourself as well. That means you must remove your jewelry, you must wash your hands, you must wear a hairnet, you must not eat, etc. It is critical to lead by example to reinforce the confidence of your employees and show that you care about your facility. All right, so I jumped ahead. So also conducting audits. So I have many food safety quality leads on here. Not sure the percentage of people that are actual employees or if they're consultants or if they're auditors. So I'm just kind of speaking openly. I think as food safety people, we all understand the importance of internal and external auditing. They're necessary to keep your programs in check. And through, the internal audits are good to do regularly. It's really important also to create a culture of continuous improvement by getting third-party audits conducted. So getting that outsider perspective to come in and view your programs and make sure you're doing the right things. And for the startup companies that might be here, it might be okay in the beginning to just do regular good manufacturing practice like GMP audits or a food safety type audit that's offered by an auditing company or by a consultant. But in the future, just so that the owners and founders on here are aware, the larger retailers and customers like the Krogers, the Walmarts, the Targets, the Costco, Cisco, UNFI, Trader Joe, like all of the big guys usually require that you have one of the GFSI benchmark audit schemes, such as like BRC or SQF or any of the other 14 schemes that are out there. So depending on your type of product, a lot of them recommend that to be, that's like minimum get in the door to be a private label supplier. And even if you're not a private label supplier, that does not mean that you shouldn't have those types of programs in place. They're really helpful for hitting all these 10 elements. And as I mentioned the previous webinar, if you go back and look at the five ways GFSI helps you develop it, there's foundational pieces built into the audit schemes to help you have this stuff in place. Another great opportunity to building food safety culture is to understand the hazards and concerns with your suppliers and their products and their facilities. So there are multiple ways to do this. Include them in discussions as you and also as you collect data. So they can help build your raw material program for the individual items they supply. They might write your specs for you. I know in my previous role, a lot of times we relied on the companies to write their own specs and teach us what the specs should be. From a product development standpoint, that's helpful. From a data management standpoint, that's helpful. But also, it's important if you know the quality of the product, of the raw material very well, and you have specific attributes you want from it, then you also need to be actively having conversations back and forth. What do they sell? You know, and that goes into supply chain and negotiations and sourcing more than it does quality assurance and food safety, but you could see where the two blend very well. So it's just an important thing to have great relationships with your suppliers and nurture them with your team. And that will give you a strong conduit to understanding your situations clearly. It'll help you build your food safety plans better, your HACCP plans better, and your food safety program altogether. All right, next up, technology. Technology is such a big one, and I reference here the tech-enabled, like the new era for smarter food safety that was put out by the FDA, and I'm referencing that on the bottom. And so just looking at the types of tools, the goal there is to modernize the food safety or the food industry in general for food safety practices. And they're suggesting, the FDA suggested that we do this through tech-enabled traceability programs, smarter tools and approaches for prevention and outbreak response. So just tapping into the tools that exist, but also the new technology that's coming. And then new business models and retail modernization, There's a lot of change and a lot of shift going on right now in the industry when it comes to trying to modernize. And I joked about earlier the blockchain technology and that's shifting more to quote unquote traceability, and the traceability rule is going into effect with the FDA. There's a lot of push from the regulatory perspective that we need to have our programs modernized. And I put this all together with kind of that continuous improvement culture, and then monitoring, measuring, and having good metrics. Data analysis is something that should be a part of every facility, not just in your efficiencies related to your product, you know, as your production lines. And so it's not always just about like, how much volume have I gotten out? Why have I not? And collecting information about how much waste we have. These are all great things to have with your programs, but I think we all can understand too the monitoring, measuring, and metrics that are associated with food safety and quality programs. But if you are in that position and you're doing it all in an Excel spreadsheet, that is tedious, it takes time. And I would bet you like 85% of the people on this call are, you know, were food safety quality leads. Most likely you have faced it where you have a problem of having enough time to go and analyze the data. So tapping into tools that are out there, look for them, talk to service providers, talk again to your suppliers, talk to colleagues in the industry. Find out what tools are available to you that can analyze and crunch your data faster. The best way to do that is to capture it digitally. You can't just hand write on your operating, you know, all your forms and all your sheets and capture the data. You have to make it, you like to have to bring it alive. So the data that's on a piece of paper is just stagnant. But when you bring it into some kind of digital form, and you can start trending it a little bit easier, and you don't have people having to type and you know, input data and have mistakes. The mistakes might still happen, you know, but hopefully those are more like outliers, because the culture of your facility would be utilizing this technology from the beginning. And so when I speak to the owners, the founders, if you are in production or maintenance, just kind of those outlying groups, that's about 13% of the people on the call. Really think about how do we do that in every facet. Don't think of it as an afterthought with your food safety quality team. Include them. They need those tools. And if you're in a really early stage of your manufacturing facility or company, you might not have somebody in the position that's knowledgeable of all of that. So then that's where it's really important to include food safety quality people, auditing companies, build your network with those types of people in it so that you can give your team the tools that they need in order to grow. So it's like, expand your network. Don't just focus on sales. Don't just focus on customer. Focus on team development as well. And that will help push into finding equipment, tools, you know, anything that's out there related to technology is really be open-minded for that. And the nine that I just mentioned feed into the continuous improvement type culture, which helps kind of round out a food safety culture in general. All right, I've been speaking a good 35 minutes, so I'm going to switch over to a poll question and ask you, from your perspective, what areas need improvement in your food safety culture according to you? And so I'm seeing who's in my audience. I'm going to just read through them, like policies, procedures, metrics. Do you have communication, leadership training that you need? Supplier relationship audits, technology, continual improvement. So I'm seeing the poll is still calculating. Everybody's seeing it. I'm not seeing any votes though, so I might be looking at the wrong thing. Parker, you might have to step in and tell me how the votes are looking.
It looks like the poll is up, but I'm not seeing any responses coming in. Let me take a look into it real quick. I might try to relaunch.
Might have technical difficulties, so Parker's taken over and going to try to launch it again. So hang tight for a second. We'll figure it out pretty quickly, hopefully. In the meantime, you can think about what your response is. If you have multiple responses and I didn't cover it, which one is the most important? And if we have to, we can throw them in the chat. So Parker, you let us know if we need to do that.
I'm launching it right here in a second. I just have to create a new poll. So let me load that one in.
Okay.
Now it should be launched.
Yeah, poll is open. Okay, so if you could jump in and start putting in your responses. It's bouncing all over the place right now. We have communication is coming up top, which is really interesting. It's really, yeah, a lot of people are marking that. We only have about 50% that have voted, so keep bringing in your votes if you haven't voted yet. Really interesting. All right, there's about 58% that have voted. If there's a few more out there that could add yours, just so that we can keep kind of talking through a little bit more. All right. A few more seconds. Sorry, I know this seems like it's weird. We're looking at timers and looking at number of votes. So we have about 65% that voted in a minute. So I'm going to go ahead and close the poll so that we can go on and sharing the poll results. Okay, so 64% said that communication leadership training are their key areas, and then 15% mentioned technology, 13% with continuous improvement, and 3% on policies. So to me, what I'm seeing is that there is a strong desire with this community to implement better communication, leadership, and training. That's really, like, that's fascinating information. I don't know if everybody else on the poll finds it as interesting as I do, but like even technology is a little bit lower on the list. So supporting that growth and development of your team, learning how to communicate to each other and doing really good training is top of mind. All right. So a reminder of what we covered before and things that we were kind of keeping in mind was you have a culture, whether you realize it or not. You have a global supply chain, which means we need to look at food safety throughout the entire globe and your entire supply chain that supplies you and who you supply forward. Leaders and managers throughout every organization own food safety, so everyone. Whether you know it or not, you're probably in a role that owns it. And then regular communication is education, metrics, so kind of what we just talked about in the poll. These are all areas, including personal accountability, are important and vital to advancing food safety everywhere. Skills like adaptability and hazard awareness help move the needle forward in food safety. These are skills that have nothing to do with food safety and more about leadership and managing change. So great discussion at this point. I think my summary, just kind of covering again, let me crack through all of the clicks here. So just revisiting again how the GFSI definition of food safety and the definition that I created before kind of intertwine. So the vision and mission define the beliefs and social forms and material traits of a workplace. It also sets the goals and practices. Then people demonstrate the attitude and develop a consistency amongst their processes. The values are demonstrated by people's consistency and their adaptability to change, and including hazard and risk awareness in the practices helps all employees stay consistent and focused on food safety culture. It really does start with the vision and mission and the top-down support of the people. And GFSI is a great way to enforce it. However, I mentioned It's not the most important thing to have in place. You can use the 10 culture that we talked about before, or you can do it with the GFSI. It needs to be mentioned as well that it is critical to have leadership support, and that is driven from both ends of the organizational chart. It cannot just be, again, the food safety quality team leading or enforcing all of the food safety programs. It needs to be a core value of the company. And then this is just a revisit of all the 10 that we mentioned. So similarly to GFSI ways of addressing food safety culture, these 10 methods can also develop food safety culture and be part of your strategy. You can combine these into your strategy and easily work on them as part of your goals as a food safety quality leader, and also as an executive, a production and maintenance person as well. And I saw sales and business development as well on the call. So last poll question, then we'll go into questions if there's any. Would you like Safe Food and Root to reach out to you regarding your food safety culture? This is a closed poll, so feel free to put it in there. It won't be shown, the results won't be shown. And so you can be added to our newsletter or not at this time, either way. And when
Perfect. Jennifer, while that poll is closing up, you know, I just wanted to jump on and say that, you know, again, this is the second part of a three-part series. Thank you so much for, you know, your time today in presenting this. I think you've got such a unique perspective on this topic, and I really appreciate it because, you know, with your background, you're really going from an operations professional, which, again, looking at the numbers, most of the people on this call, you know, over to the executive level and then, you know, to a consultant, eventually to a business owner. So I think you've got a really great perspective at, you know, all the different ways in which those roles interact and why the quality culture, you know, piece is really so important. So thank you again for this information today. So with that, we've got just a couple of questions. The first question comes to us, and let's see, let me make sure I'm getting it here. Says, we don't have a negative food safety culture, but possibly not a strong one. How can we make our meetings more fun and our culture more ingrained in our employees?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, some of it could be like engaging the team in that question. So sit down with an objective with the team and ask them, how can we make this more fun and appropriate for you? Because, I mean, let's face it, we all know that sometimes food safety is not the most exciting topic. You know, a lot of us are passionate about it, but a lot of people don't think about it the same way that food safety professionals do. And so it's like creating that fun environment, like what types of incentives? So thinking about what types of incentives would help the team to stay focused on it. In the last, in June 14th webinar, I know I mentioned kind of like reward system for sharing near misses. And so that the concept on that, and I think that would be a really fun one to implement, is like, when did you see a near miss where it could have turned really bad, but it didn't, and we overcame it? But reporting that near miss and rewarding it, you know, like, give them a gift card, you know, find ways to incentivize people to come back to you. What, and ask questions to the team of like, what does incentivize you? Do you want more money? Do you want time off? Do you want gift cards? Do you want gifts, prizes, noticed? Everybody has a different way that they like to be recognized. And so kind of focusing on the recognition piece and catering that to the person reporting it, and then build that into your policies. So those are a couple of ideas that come to mind really quick.
Yeah, I think that's great, you know, and it really also touches on the communication piece. I mean, I think you could tell by the numbers that writing policies is not the issue, right? 3%, I think, of voters said that, you know, they needed new policies, where, you know, a large majority said it was just the communication of those policies. So yeah, I think that's a great idea, you know, asking your employees, because you know, you might have multiple sites and you're not going to get the same responses, I'm sure, you know, from your different sites within the same organization. So I think it's really important to cater that to, you know, your team. Okay, so great. The next question. So you touched on the technology just a little bit. With all of the software solutions that are available in the marketplace, can you give us a couple of really key items that we need to look for as must-haves when we start looking into technology?
Oh, man. So things that I'm exploring with software in general. So we do consult to using different types of software. And one that I like to do look at is, I mean, your IT group's going to care about cybersecurity. So you're going to have to focus on whatever their needs are. That's a good vetting tool, not the number one for your needs met, but just make sure that it does meet all of the requirements that your IT team would require. And a lot of that is cloud-based solutions and that sort of thing. I look for personally, how much can a data crunch and automate, and does it pull in into a dashboard of some sort where it can create very easily referenced data for the person that's the decision maker? I think that's an overlooked area, to be honest. Like, dashboards are sometimes available and sometimes not. Like, they look at it more on the perspective, the user perspective and the individual user, but not always the executive reviewer. And what kind of interaction and usability do you have? So user experience is something to just kind of look at. Who are your users that are going to be using it? Is it going to be your food safety quality team only? Is it going to be the leadership team as well as your food safety quality team? Are your suppliers going to interact with it? So a few areas that I look at is supplier management, your quality and food safety management systems. And you know, there's some training tools out there. From that perspective, there's a form builder, so you can stay and create your own, but I would lock that under house, you know, like kind of lock and key with your team, because you don't want everybody creating things that are not standardized or inconsistent. And speaking of that, like version control, that's something I would focus on, especially in your quality management system, to make sure that everybody's using the most updated document. And that's one of the biggest concerns that I see out there, is like, which version is the correct version? Which spec is the right spec? Which formula is the right formula? There are also formula management for those that are doing things with, you know, wanting to have their recipes managed. Sometimes that's more on your SAP systems as well. And you can create that as kind of a integrated integration. That's something to keep an eye on. Does it integrate with any of your other tools that your company is using? If you're a young company, many companies are using Salesforce. Personally, we use Zoho One. Is there any integration ability between those that we can push data back and forth? These become bigger projects. Like when I was at Kroger, we had an entire project management team dedicated to creating a new data, like a new basically software to vet our suppliers as they came in the door. So there was an onboarding process, and then there was a maintenance process. That took massive amount of people because we had massive amount of data systems and people that were interacting with the tool. So it really comes down to, like, the more simple, the easier it is to implement. But it also is siloed, where, I mean, we just talked to a prospect the other day that was asking us about our supplier management capabilities, and then turned around and said, oh, I just found out we had somebody, and they were at an executive level. So that shows you the siloing that can happen even in a small company when you don't have everybody accessing the same tool. That's a lot. Sorry. Reach out to me if you want to talk about it more, because I have a lot of different suggestions on how to go about software.
Yeah, well, that's perfect. And it gives us a really great segue into our next webinar, part three, the final of the series, titled How Software Helps Food Safety Culture. So, you know, hopefully any questions. That is going to be, now, Jennifer, correct me if I'm wrong, Wednesday, October the 4th.
Correct. Yes, that's Perfect. Right. And if anyone on this webinar has specific areas, I'm still designing that webinar at this point. So if there's any areas of interest that you want me to try to focus on, my biggest goal and reason for that webinar is to talk about how to budget it into your next, you know, in 2024 budget and why it's important to include it. But if you have things that you want suggested, just put a note in the chat and we'll, or in the questions, and just put a note in there saying this is to answer, you know, like for the next webinar, I'd like to see, you know, just put that as your phrasing. And then we'll look at that and add that to our list of discussion topics if it makes sense for us to include. If it's not too granular, I want to make sure that it still meets the audience needs.
Fantastic. Well, Jennifer, on behalf of Parker and myself and everyone here at the PJR FSI family, thank you for today, and we look forward to seeing you back in 6 weeks for part three.
All right. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Again, if you need to reach out to us, all the information's on the screen. Appreciate the attendance and the study attendance all the way to the end.
Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great afternoon.